This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The year 2003 is the Year of the Blues by Act of Congress. In its official proclamation, blues music is recognized as, quote, the most influential form of American roots music, with its impact heard around the world in rock and roll, jazz, rhythm and blues, country, and even classical music, end quote. Well, guitarist Corey Harris represents a new generation of blues musicians. He's known for his contemporary interpretations of the classic form. His most recent releases include Down Home Sophisticate on Rounder Records and Live at Star Hill. He recently narrated the first in Martin Scorsese's documentary series called The Blues. It airs at the end of this month on PBS stations. And he's our guest this hour to help us celebrate the Year of the Blues. Corey Harris, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I don't think there's a better way to start a show about music than to hear some music.
All right, well, that's why I'm here.
That's bluesman Corey Harris here live with us in Studio 3A as we celebrate the Year of the Blues. What's your relationship to the blues? What makes this kind of music important to you? If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. And Corey Harris, what's the significance of the Year of the Blues to you?
Well... that's a good question. To me, it represents an opportunity to promote roots and culture in music and to make people aware of the roots of popular music.
On the one hand, sure, it's an opportunity. On the other hand, you know, every year is the Year of the Blues, it seems to me.
Yeah, in a way. But a friend told me... who, as we were talking about the blues, someone in the music, and he says, well, you know, this is the Year of the Blues. We may not see another Year of the Blues by congressional proclamation for many years. So, you know, I think I'm trying to make the best of it and let people know about the music and also all the other musics that derive from the form.
Well, let's talk, though, about the original form there for a minute. What were you playing there just a couple of minutes ago?
Well, that was the traditional tune, Catfish Blues. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have probably heard Muddy Waters' version of it. I believe it was Robert Pettway who first did the tune way back in the late 20s. In fact, I think it was one of the first tunes ever recorded. Blues tunes.
And it's just, you know, I'm no musician, but it sounded like your pretty standard 12-bar blues there.
Pretty standard, yeah. In fact, that's about as basic and standard as it gets, I think.
Now, you normally, you're part of the new generation of blues singers, but it always does go back to the roots, doesn't it? When did your connection to the blues start?
Ooh. Well, I guess when my family came to America 400 years ago, and from then on, you know, I mean, I wasn't always, you know, hardcore listening to this sort of music, but it was something I was always aware of. As a kid, you know, we had records around the house. My mom had records, but it wasn't like, oh, this is a blues record and this, on the other hand, is a jazz record. It was just all music, you know, and so I really wasn't aware of the different genres. But for me, I think it just started from, you know, listening to records at parties, family reunions, in the house, and then going to church sometimes and listening to the same music, but with a different, slightly different lyrical content, different songs. But the music is very similar on both sides.
Now, you started playing from a very early age.
Yeah. I played music my whole life. I was interested in music. I played trumpet mainly many, many years in school coming up and was in the marching band and, you know, that sort of thing. I started guitar around 11 or 12.
Are there blues heroes that were important to you then?
Back in the day, I was really aware of B.B. King. That was the first concert I ever went to, was B.B. King. My mom and stepdad took me, and I remember it really well, like it was yesterday. And then I remember, you know, being at people's houses and they throw on a ZZ Hill record, or going to a barbecue joint and seeing Lattimore on the jukebox. So, you know, it was around. But when I was a kid first starting out, I think it was a Lightnin' Hopkins record that really got me into it, you know.
Were you, when you started to play guitar, you were playing acoustic guitar? Did you go right away to...
I was playing acoustic first, yeah.
Yeah. Because a lot of kids really like to make a lot of noise.
Yeah, I made noise. I had an electric very soon after, but it was acoustic.
Let's get some listeners involved. Again, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email, if you'd like to send it, TOTN@NPR.org. And let's join Chris, who's with us from Appleton, Wisconsin. Hello, Chris.
Hi.
You're on the air.
My name's, I'm calling because I'm a guitar player. I started playing right around 1992, right after Stevie Ray Vaughan's death. And I got into it pretty much just there's something to do it. And then along the way, I discovered, I got into like the late 60s bands like Cream, who somewhat were influenced. And through one of their songs, like Spoonful, which was a Willie Dixon song, I found out, okay, who's Willie Dixon? And I found out who Howlin' Wolf was. And then along the way, I found out Robert Johnson and along that. And a lot of guitar players start that way.
It's reading the liner notes on those record labels, right?
Yeah, and then eventually you find the recordings of who did those songs, and then you go, okay, that's where this certain riff came from, or that certain lick that everybody played through years did.
Yeah. Corey Harris, did you explore music backwards that way?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think even now I'm exploring what I don't know and uncovering my ignorance of musical history. So it's a continuing process.
Yeah. So, Chris, what are you playing now?
I'm basically still in the rock format, but I do still like, and I'm glad that they're finally doing the series.
The PBS series you're talking about.
The Blue series, yes. I'm very looking forward to it. I think it's about time.
Yeah.
It's not been discovered. It's not been, I think in certain circles, it's not been discussed as much as the other musics like jazz or country or classic.
True.
It seems to be put more on a media back burner in some senses.
Well, Chris, thanks very much, and continued good luck to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Does the blues get disrespected?
Well, I think it suffers from stereotypes that have been imposed upon it. Definitely, there are, you know, certain strains of disrespect, but I don't really pay it no mind myself. I just love music. I love all music that's good. So yeah, there's some of it, but I don't let it bother me.
All right, let's get another caller in. Don joins us on the line from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Hello, everyone. Corey, you're sounding great.
Thanks.
Hey, I just wanted to call, and I'm a big fan of the blues, have been for many years, primarily because I'm a guitar player, not a very good one. So if I'm singing out of key and my guitar's not quite in tune, then I can tell everyone that's authentic blues.
Yes, you're feeling it.
The other thing I'm doing is since it's kind of easy to write blues tunes, simple emotions, and I think that's what I like about blues, conveys a lot of emotion, even though it's very, very straightforward, a very honest form of music. But when I write stuff, I'm doing like some Christian blues tunes, which I figure no one else is doing, so I must be the best there is in that particular subgenre.
Yeah, you're right.
So, Don, what do you? I mean, other than your ability to master it at a relatively low technical level, what do you like about the blues?
Well, again, I think it's the emotion that can be conveyed through that, and there's something about the simplicity of it that that I just really like. But you can enjoy it at many different levels, and sometimes it's Delta blues, and of course here in North Carolina, a lot of famous Piedmont blues artists were here.
Yeah.
But Chicago blues, and there's just a variety of styles, and just a great way to express, again, some very basic emotions about the human condition. I think that's why I enjoy it so much.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks very much for calling, Don.
Thanks.
Here's an email we got from Maria Orapollo in Chesapeake, Virginia. My daughters grew up surrounded by music, all kinds, and most of it performed live in our kitchen, on our porch, in theaters, or in parks. As toddlers, they immediately took to the blues. They danced to it, walked to it, and talked to it. A blues player once told me, "Blues beat is the same rhythm as the human body. The way our blood pulses through our veins is analogous to a basic blues beat. I guess the blues are us," she concludes.
That's poetic in and of itself.
That's poetry. You mentioned the music, the different kinds of music that has been influenced by the blues, and we've heard some discussion of it, all the different genres as the music spread throughout the country as technology changed and electricity was added to it, and we got the Chicago blues. But it doesn't stop there, does it?
No. Look at, say, someone like James Brown. James Brown definitely came out of the church. He came out of blues. And then from that, you had soul. And then he came up with funk. And if there had been no James Brown, who knows if hip-hop would have happened when it did. Because at the outset, he was the cat, that people were sampling the most, along with somebody like, George Clinton and the Meters. So, definitely it has a lot of influence. Also, look at something like Bob Marley, for example, when he was coming up in Jamaica, him and Peter Tosh and Bunny Wailer could pick up New Orleans radio stations. So they were listening to Fats Domino and, people like Alan Toussaint and, all the big New Orleans R&B acts. So it's definitely affects music. Even now, for example, I was in Mali last year filming the...
In West Africa.
Yeah, in Mali, West Africa. Not filming, but actually recording a record that's coming out on Rounder Records in October. And Ali Farka Touré came to pick us up at the airport, the great Malian guitarist and singer. And he was listening to Otis Redding and Bobby Blue Bland in his SUV.
Hmm.
So it lets me know that even though a lot of people don't understand the lyrics or the precise historic circumstances that gave birth to the form, they feel it. It's universal, and I think a lot of it has to do with the harmonic qualities of the blues. The scales that are used are very common in many cultures. You see the pentatonic scale. So it's universal.
We're talking with blues artist Corey Harris about the history and the future of the blues. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email. The address is totn@npr.org, and we may hear another song or two. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the history and the future of the blues with blues man Corey Harris. If you have a history with the blues, you're invited to join our discussion. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Corey Harris, before the break, we were discussing your trip to Mali, mm-hmm. and you're recording a record there. As I've read a little bit about you, your travels have really helped transform what you like to do in music.
Yeah, I've always, since my early 20s, I've been traveling pretty heavily. I spent semesters in France when I was in school, and I visited the Soviet Union back when it was the Soviet Union in the late 80s. So I was playing music even back then, but it was when I started going to West Africa, namely Cameroon, and then later on a few trips to Mali that definitely informed my playing. I think it brought me closer to the roots of what I was doing over here, you know, because...
Well, you were playing a little bit of you know, what we consider classic blues before. Why don't you show us something now where maybe this new influence has had some effect?
Well, Ibella never flow. Well, he dare talk no seed from mom. No, the money he did chop. Well, he never savvy half a storm. Money I never try for work. Well, he go chop every last dollar. So much palaver, so much wahala. You go cry, way, 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 way. Now so him dead. Na, 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 money I. Na, na, money I. Na, 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 na. Whoa, whoa, well, sometime and forget woman where she like too much to dress. Chicks ain't making plenty money, so she act like she interests. But just one little sparkly of fire afford to burn the whole forest. I just had to tell my story, make I tell you the rest. Well, well, na 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 na. Woman make too much young, I mean, say the girl be styling. High price fashion, shiny gold chain, but cannot find no food to eat. So many slaving to maintain some illusion of luxury. So many slaving to maintain some illusion of luxury, yeah. Na 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 money I. Na na money I. Na 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 na. Whoa, 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 na 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 na. Hey, yeah, 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 yeah. Dollar, dollar bill, y'all funky U.S. dollar bill, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, U.S. dollar bill, funky U.S. dollar bill. Mama, 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 go turn. Well, a papa's son go burn. Man, he get for sweat for a dollar. Woman born Peking get for holla. So much palaver, so much wahala. You go cry, way, 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 way. Go cry, way, 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 way. Now so him dead. Na, 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 money, aye. Na, na, money, aye, 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 aye. Na, na. Oh well, two country man chop, yeah man, the two king like four crown. Money, I vex me until I get for put on down. Girl, they crowd into the night, but I would not be her clown. Now, money, I quit me at sunrise. Now, money, money, I can't be found. Money, money, I can't be found. Na, 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 money, ay, ay, ay. Na, na, money, ay, 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 ay. Na na na, oh, na na money aye, na na money aye, wa 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 na money.
Corey Harris here in Studio 3A, and what's the name of that?
That's a tune called Money Aye. It's all about how there can be a problem when you have too much money.
Definitely not one that I'm familiar with,
yeah.
But I suspect you may not be either.
Yeah, I don't know nothing about that either, but I wrote a song about it anyway.
When you took your roots and what you did, and you encountered music like that, and that sounds like West Africa to me.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you, you know, what was your first question when you wanted to write a song like that? I mean, where do you begin? I mean, you have a certain rhythm and structure to the blues that you know.
Yeah.
What do you glom onto?
The rhythm. The rhythm is the main thing. For me, it all starts with, well, the heartbeat first, and then the drum, you know, and then everything follows from there. So when I'm writing a song, I'm inspired by a beat, either a beat of a drum or a beat of a drum that's implied by some words I hear, but it's always the rhythm.
Hmm. Let's get another listener on the line. David joins us from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Hey, Neil. Hey, Corey.
Hey, what's happening?
Oh, man, I tell you. It's funny you mentioned sacred music, because I think when I was a small child, my mother had this Mahalia Jackson album, which I pretty much insisted upon playing, you know, when I wasn't playing my dad's Brubeck stuff. I would play this Mahalia Jackson album, and it was a Christmas album, but I'd play the thing in July.
Yeah.
And with her stuff, and also a lot of the stuff, I mean, American Bandstand was on when I was a kid, and a lot of the Motown stuff, I was actually paying less attention to the words, the Holland Dozier Holland stuff was, the lyrics were great, but I was actually paying a lot of attention to the backing band, because those bands and the band behind was behind Otis Redding as well.
Yeah,
which a lot of people don't realize is like the core of the Blues Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, that particular band, the Barquets, also died with him when he crashed, but he played a lot.
Right, I'm talking about some of the later stuff with Donald Dunn and Steve Cropper and Bobby Jones.
Yeah,
just listening to that. I mean, I have three guitars and I'm so stage frighty that I don't put anything in front of other people. It's just that my guitars are kind of my psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, reaching back, I mean, it sounds like you've reached back a long way historically in your travels. And I'm just kind of beginning that. I mean, my principal interest has been in electric blues and some of the Muddy Waters stuff. And I managed to see him a couple times before he passed.
Wow.
And then then also with B.B. King, I saw him in the U.K. and I saw him over here. But
yeah.
But I just you're right. It is something that I've made so personal to myself, in a sense that I'm almost afraid to actually try to play it in front of other people, even though I'm probably a lot better than I think I am. It's just one of those things where, you know, I'll come home on a Friday night. It'll be 11:30, and I won't close the bar. I'll just come home.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the Stratocaster will be kind of staring me in the face saying, what are you doing sitting over there?
Yeah, that's good, man.
That's what the blues does to you.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really happy to hear that, you know, there are a lot of new players, and I think that it actually has a very solid future because it is a quintessentially American music.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's with the blues, there's always hope. There's always that glimmer of hope in the song.
Yeah, you're right.
How dark it is. And I think that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really good, really good to talk to you. I want to just keep rocking on.
Okay, David.
You too.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, one thing he said, interested me. When you obviously, you know, hear yourself. Have you been at your best when you're in front of a crowd or at your best when you're by yourself, you know, just playing?
Well, I think more often than not I can... It depends. I don't know how to say it. I think sometimes when I'm by myself, you know, it sounds better to me. But then other times, you know, I need the crowd, that energy to carry me along, to inspire me, you know. But, yeah, it was something that he said about Mahalia Jackson made me think about, you know, we were talking about where the blues comes from. And to me, a lot of it has to do with transcendence. You know, if you look at the history of black people in America, we've been faced with a lot of challenges, obstacles, and the blues and spirituals before them served to help people transcend their situation. When there was no material comforts, when they didn't even have freedom, they could somehow transcend the situation. And you can see that in a lot of different types of music all over the world, where people who've been oppressed come up with something that is art. You know, they say all the time, from suffering, you get art. So I think the blues is a perfect example of that.
Blues is also a business, and joining us now is Bruce Iglauer, who's president and founder of Alligator Records. He's with us by phone from a hotel here in Washington, D.C. Bruce Iglauer, good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for inviting me.
You started Alligator Records, which is kind of a shoestring business, more than 30 years ago. How has the business changed in that time?
When I started Alligator back in 1971, it was only a few years after some white people had begun to discover the blues existed. Up to that time, I think blues had been primarily music performed by black musicians in the black community for members of the black community. And in fact, in 1970, when I moved to Chicago, the only blues that you could hear was in the South Side and the West Side in the black neighborhoods, primarily in neighborhood taverns. And on a Saturday night, there were perhaps 50 or 60 places you could go and hear a great live blues band, and I, being a non-African American, would usually be the only white face in the place. These days, blues has become the property of a world audience, and it's performed all over the world. It's performed by a lot of people who aren't African Americans, as well as by many who are. And it, to some extent, I guess it's gotten some distance away from the African-American community in the same way that other types of ethnic and neighborhood musics have left their neighborhoods. I mean, it's equally hard to hear a Polish polka band on the southwest side of Chicago in a bar as it is to hear a black blues band on the south side of Chicago in a bar.
Good point.
We're in a homogenized world culture, and blues has become part of that homogenization. So it's left its roots a little bit, but at the same time, it's become the property of a much larger audience.
Interesting email question we got from Paul Houston in Des Moines, Iowa. What do you think the future of blues music in this country is, considering that Britney Spears will make more money on one CD than all the blues performers will earn in a whole year?
I think Corey and I would agree on the economics of that.
Yeah.
I think that that the influence of blues will continue to show up in mainstream pop and rock music, and a few blues artists will enter kind of the mainstream consciousness in the way that B.B. King, bless his heart, has been able to do for so many years. But because blues is music of hard emotions and stories of reality and the good and bad parts of reality, the likelihood of its being able to enter the pop mainstream, which is usually songs of easy emotions, seems pretty unlikely to me. I think that blues will continue to be a music that reaches a minority audience, but converts people in a way that makes them lifelong fans. I mean, blues is a pretty addictive form of music. Mm. It's not something you listen to and then say, well, gee, now I think I'll listen to some Britney Spears.
We're speaking with Bruce Iglauer of Alligator Records and, of course, with bluesman Corey Harris. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we get a listener in. Texas Slim joins us from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hello, Corey. Hello, Bruce Iglauer. I kind of know both of you guys. You're both in my heart.
Hey.
But I would just like to say, my friend and I went to the Chicago Blues Festival this year, and it was pitiful.
Oh.
I'm sorry to say. It was, Bruce hit the nail on the head. We went to the South Side. There's only a couple of clubs where you can hear the real blues. I mean, guys that have been in the trenches. And I just got to say one thing to the guys who are playing blues out there, especially the white guys. Dress up. Dress up. I don't want to come see you playing blues in tattered jeans, baggy T-shirt, and stuff. Guys like T-Bone Walker, Jimmy Reed, Lil Walter, these guys came out. They were clean, and they played the blues, and they were hot.
Mm.
I mean, look like you're playing the blues. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
As long as I don't take this prescription to the radio business, I'm going to agree with you all the way.
There you go.
It's funny, you know, that makes me think of something my dad was telling me years ago. He saw T-Bone Walker at his school. He went to school down in Arkansas. And he said T-Bone Walker played at his school, but prior to the school, the people in the band were using the school cafeteria. And he observed a man coming in with real shaggy, unkempt hair, T-shirt, baggy jeans, and he said some shoes that were tennis shoes that were cut to make sandals, old tennis shoes. And he realized that this was T-Bone Walker in the cafeteria line. But when stage time come, you know, that's classic T-Bone Walker. He's got his suit. He's looking tight. He's got his hair together. But I hear you, you know. But I think for me, it's all about the feeling and the intent and the vibe expressed in the music.
Of course. I mean, you know, but some of the older blues guys that I see, you know, they feel like they're disrespecting the blues.
And I hear you.
These older guys say, man, what is this guy up here playing? You know, he's, you know.
I hear you, but
he's looking like he fell off a, you know, a hay wagon.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to, I think it's definitely good to appear professional in your job and everything, but you know, I know a guy I have a lot of respect for down in Alabama, Mr. Willie King, who's a great...
I know Willie.
Yeah, and he was telling me this. He was saying how, you know, other cats have said to him, you know, how come you don't dress up like Bobby Rush or Little Milton, you know? And he says, well, you know, that ain't me. I'm from the
Willie's
country.
From another school.
Yeah, he's from another school, so I think I kind of feel Willie's school, but I feel where you're coming from.
And just to let you know, I was talking to people from Europe who knew more about blues than those guys who were born and raised up in the south side of Chicago.
Yeah.
Their lives.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe the knowledge that they had about, I'm talking about down to, I mean, what type of harmonicas Jimmy Reed used.
And, right.
And the first position, second position, all that stuff. Bruce Iglar, thank you, man.
Well, and Texas Slim, thank you for the phone call.
You got it.
Okay, and Bruce, we appreciate your time today.
Well, it's always good to talk to you.
Bruce Iglauer is president and founder of Alligator Records. And Corey Harris, we have a minute and 15 seconds. Why don't you play us to the break? You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're celebrating the Year of the Blues with blues artist Corey Harris.
The blues takes you back to the place where it first came to life. There's an old African saying that the roots of a tree cast no shadow. That's how deep the blues goes. When you really listen to the music, you understand. This is the one thing they could never take away from black people.
That, an excerpt from the Martin Scorsese film The Blues. And the first episode is narrated by Corey Harris and debuts later this month on PBS. Is that right?
That's right. September 28th, 8:30 p.m.
What was it like doing that picture?
Well, it was great. It brought me back to Mali. I'd been to Mali one time previous to that, and I went after it. The first time I went was to open up for Boubacar Traore, otherwise called Karkar, a great Malian guitarist and singer. But going to Mali, it was I really felt like I was going to a spiritual homeland because, you know, listening to the music, I'd been listening to Mali music before I went, and then a lot more heavily, and then uncovering the similarities between Malian contemporary music and traditional music and African-American music, it really swept me away, and it continues to be an influence on my music making and creativity.
But what did you respond? I mean, Martin Scorsese wants to make this picture, and he wants you to be the star.
Oh, it was a great honor. You know, I really, to this day, don't know how it all got started. Someone just called my people and said, hey, we want you to do this. And I was glad to do it because I felt like this would do a service to the culture and to the music. I felt that it would enlighten people about Africa and about the blues, things that I care very strongly about. But meeting Martin Scorsese, in fact, when I met him, I didn't know I'd met him. I was backstage in New York, and a guy comes up and says, "Oh, hi, I'm Marty." And I'm like, "Okay, hey, what's up, Marty?" And then it just kind of dawned on me after a few minutes, oh, wait a minute, this isn't just Marty, this is Martin Scorsese, you know. But he's a really, really down-to-earth guy. He does his homework. He knows so much about so many different topics, and it was a real honor to meet him because he's had a big impact on so many different people, on just popular culture in general.
Let's get back to the phones. Our next caller is Gilbert, who joins us on the line from Denver, Colorado.
Hi, Franz. Hi, Corey.
Hey.
I don't know that we've met, but you know something about Denver, I believe.
Yeah, a few things.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm a retired African-American clergyman, and, of course, the black church has been deeply involved in that. I think sometimes we don't admit it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we as churchmen say is that our task is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
Funny, we say that in journalism, too.
Do you say that? Yeah. Just a couple, another comment in terms of how different cultures can free you up. 1971, I was in Tanzania, a very uptight clergyman, and I went to a club and went upstairs to dance because I really couldn't free myself up. And it's amazing how in that place in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, I developed a real skill as a disco dancer, but mm-hmm. that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder whether or not one of your callers said that the country will never really embrace the blues, but do you think that 9/11 and some other things that have happened create a kind of reality that there will be not only individual recognition of our blues status, but a kind of individual kind of thing? Well, what do you think about that? I'll just hang on and listen.
Okay, Gilbert, thanks very much for the call.
I think that was an interesting point. Well, I'll go back to my previous point about transcendence. You know, now in this new world after 9/11, people are talking about terror and terrorism, but black people have been terrorized in the South for decades. From the end of the Civil War up until the present day, there's been different forms of terror, from church bombings, churches being burned down, lynchings, that sort of thing. So I think there's always been a segment of society in America that has not felt safe and has not enjoyed the full protection of the law. And now this lawlessness, through many different factors, has consumed the mainstream society as well. So many people, where previously they felt safe, now are realizing that there's no hard and fast guarantees in this world and anything can happen at any time. And I think other people, black people and other people in America whose history had a lot of tragedy, knew that before. Poor people of all types knew that before. So I think that's the main thing. And I think with music, our job is to show the current events and tell them in a creative way and try to educate people on different viewpoints on how to deal with the issues we face. If you look at the older blues players, they weren't singing about people 50 years prior to them. Robert Johnson was singing music that was young people's music back then. He wasn't singing music from the Civil War. So we have to be current and up to date also. And I think there's a place for blues musicians to go back and really revel in the history and play those old songs, but we've got to write music that talks about today, that means something about today and speaks about current events. And so even though there's all these horrible things going on, it's a creative opportunity for us as artists to really look within and provide some sort of meaning on the creative, metaphysical level to what's going on.
Which leads right into an email we got from Sarah Jane in Portland, Oregon. I've been playing bass and guitar professionally in various bands since I was 13, though I liked a lot of what was called the blues as I grew up. For the most part, the blues as a style was so predictable that I got bored easily. So my question is, what exactly defines the blues, and how adventurous can someone be with stretching the boundaries of that style and still create something called blues?
Right. Well, that's a great question. I think there's different types of blues. To me, there's three. There's blues as the business or the marketplace of the blues, selling the blues. Then there is the music itself, all of it that is known as the blues, from the Allman Brothers to Robert Johnson to Ry Cooder to Howlin' Wolf. And then there is the musical form that is called the blues, which is a musical form just like you have a polka is a musical form, a waltz is a musical form. So when you get on the bandstand, say you've never met the other musicians, you can say, all right, I want a waltz. It's going to be in this key. Let's go. They know automatically what they're going to do. Likewise, if you say, okay, this is my song, it's a blues. It's in the key of such and such. Then they know right away. So it's a really, to me, blues is a song form at its base. It's a blueprint, and then we can take it from there and use it however we want. You know, you look at Duke Ellington, some of his blues are like classical pieces almost. Or you listen to Debussy, that's definitely blue classical music. So I think there's a lot of ways to interpret it, but at its heart for me, it's a form that we can use to express ourselves.
You talked about a lot of things. Is catharsis an important part of the blues?
Yeah, definitely. If there's something bothering you, you know, you speak the truth about it, it gets it off your chest. It's therapeutic. And I think a lot of the horrors that have happened in American history to make the blues happen, many of them have been unspeakable. And so part of it has been in the culture to speak what happened and to get over it. And by speaking it, you gain some sort of power.
Which is why you have so many blues songs about floods and famines, and why you have so many blues songs about broken hearts,
yep,
too.
Yep, you got it.
Yeah. Blues man Corey Harris is with us here live in Studio 3A. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And there's one more song you wanted to play for us?
Yeah, there's a song I'd like to play for you. This is a song I did on a record called Voodoo Men's on Alligator Records. I did with Mr. Henry Butler, my esteemed colleague from down in New Orleans, a great jazz blues pianist. This is a tune called King Cotton.
Tell you people I had a dream. I wanna tell you people I had a dream last night. Seen all the demons and the angels, man, it was a hell of a fight. Greenville, cotton gin, where my grandpa did his time at Greenville Cotton Gin. Never seen my grandpa beg, I never seen my grandpa grin.
Harris, is that a National steel-bodied guitar you were playing there?
It is indeed.
I
yeah.
Only read about those. I don't think I've ever seen one.
Yeah, they of course they started out. National and Dobro were the same company, National Guitars, and then the Dopiero brothers had a fight, and they formed National and Dobro separately. And National, I think, went out of production for a couple, well, maybe a decade or so in the 70s, I believe, and then. Don Taylor and McGregor Gaines out in San Luis Obispo, California, bought the rights, and now they're making National Guitars to the original specifications.
Well, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
You go on later tonight to perform at the Kennedy Center. Is that part of their celebration of the blues?
Yeah, I'm playing for Congress tonight, so I'm going to do my lobbying.
Well, get in a word for us if you happen to.
Yeah, I guess I heard y'all need some help.
Blues artist Corey Harris, you can catch him if you're not going to the Kennedy Center tonight. You can catch him narrating Martin Scorsese's blues documentary called Feel Like Going Home, which is part of the Blues series that premieres on Sunday, September 28th on PBS. The series lasts until October 4th. He also has a new album coming out in October called Mississippi to Mali on Rounder Records. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.